banned by the courts. I have never seen the Justice Department so wrong if the courts are right. What else? What else is what I referred to last night, but we'll refer to in this context again? The erosion of a sense of what reality is among the American people, along with this way of accepting this very pleasant, optimistic man who makes us all feel better. Along with that is a sense of having learned from President Reagan that it doesn't much matter what he says. The facts are not important. Feelings are important. We have, in some sense, lost respect for facts, what facts are. That if one can join in the fantasy of a president and accept it, after a while, the line that lies between reality and fantasy begins to be blurred. And I really do think that for many Americans, in many important respects, that line has been blurred. I think it's one of the reasons why we cast around in a rather helpless fashion, looking for things to fasten on. When trivia become important issues, is really because it's hard to know what important issues are and what to think about them. I mean, we all feel a little bit ashamed about the way this last campaign was run. I find it quite remarkable that after the election, which should be an exhilarating event, we find it much more an exhausting event, no matter which side one voted for. Exhausting, and there was a slight feeling of uneasiness, and nobody feels very proud that it was a matter of flags and prison furloughs. And yet, it is because we can't look straight at issues that nobody will tell us are the issues and that nobody will talk about. And if our leaders want to talk unreality, we'll accept that unreality for a while at least as being reality, at least for a while. George Bush has a very hard job ahead of him. He has to try, he is saddled with a great many problems that his mentor has left for him. And without the charisma, without, I haven't used the word mandate because I don't know what it means, but without the kind of charisma that makes it possible for one person for 8 years to go from being very popular to less popular to more popular, and finally to be enshrined like an icon, Bush will not be able to do that. Bush will have to govern. He will have to govern, and every time he goes into a closet in the White House, he will open up and find a problem there that was left for him. Not a skeleton, but a big problem, a sleeper that was left for him. How do I handle this? What am I going to do if they tell me that we're nearing a recession? What am I going to do if the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan, says, as he will probably say in a message to Bush about the time he takes office, that we are poised on the edge of a possible new recession unless very early action is taken, which indicates a substantial cut in that mountain of debt we have. How does Bush do that? He will not have the kind of influence with Congress that President Reagan had, at least at first. He has a Congress which feels its own oats. If he was elected, so was a more strongly Democratic Congress. There's nothing that he can go to Congress and say, I'm elected to do this, without Congress to say, the hell you are, we were elected to do something else. It's going to be a very trying time. And President Reagan hasn't made it easier. But what President Reagan has done is to show that it is possible to inspire without governing, to be popular without substance, and to make people feel good without doing much good. Thank you.
We're open to questions.
Or comments. Yep.
What do you think the meaning of the negative coattails of Bush is having a more democratic Congress now? Do you have any sense what he's doing?
Well, the question is about coattails in a more democratic Congress. The fact of the matter is, a popular as President Reagan is and was, his coattails were not very long. In 1986, he went out to the South and campaigned for a series of Republicans running for the Senate and said, if you want to cast one more vote for Ronald Reagan, vote for Senator Mattingly, or vote for this person running for the Senate, all of whom lost. In 1982, he also showed no coattails in the off-year elections. I think the whole idea of coattails is gone. I think the coattails happened at a time when President led a ticket and a party. And today we're in an age of media politics where people run as plebiscites on themselves. And so you can vote for Ronald Reagan or for Bush because you want him, but when it comes to voting for a senator, you like this person voting for the Senate. We won't talk about the House, where 99% of incumbents get reelected only because they have all that PAC money. So that's not an election anymore. But in the Senate, In fact, there's been an absence of coattails evident for the past 10 or 12 years. The fact is that it was not really that Bush was so much elected as Dukakis was rejected. I mean, you had a very low voter turnout, the lowest since 1924, maybe either, we don't have exact figures, but not more than half of people voted. And a lot of people really very turned off and alienated about the whole thing. And the great mandate for Bush was that nobody bought Dukakis. That doesn't give you the ability to get anybody elected with you if there was that ability. So I don't think there's any great mystery about the lack of Bush coattails. If not even Reagan can carry senators in on his coattails, certainly not George Bush. Yep.
That the public can be sold anything at any time if it's repeated often enough. And Mr. Ailes made it very clear that that was his goal and that's what he did. He seemed to be very proud of it.
Yeah, he is very proud of it. And he has gone to his head a little bit because he gave an interview to the magazine Advertising Age in which he said, listen, if I can sell a candidate, I can sell anything. He said, I probably can sell commercial products better than the advertising agencies that are doing them now. Because the agency screamed and said, wait a minute, you can sell a president by negative advertising alone, but a product you have to be able to say something good about, right? and he answered back, and he said, no, it isn't true. The basic way you sell toothpaste is the basic way that you sell a candidate. There are only three things you got to know about the way in which you grab time on television. One is provide pretty pictures. The other is attack the other guy. And the third is try to avoid making mistakes. He says, because television is interested only in pictures, attack, and mistakes. You know, funny thing is, as I think about it, he has a point. He has a point. But Ailes is very proud of himself. He understands the shaping of this medium. It is putty in his hands. And he does it awfully well. I don't know how he would do with Campbell's soup, but he does very well with George Bush. Yeah.
How does the super collider and the funds spent on that fit into your statement that research is going to start?
How does the super collider fit in with where I, first of all, I think that the Texas was probably not a political decision. I mean, the fact that it was announced after the election means it has no political effect. Had it been announced before the election, it would certainly have been considered to be, it would have been hailed as a political decision to try to support Bush. How it fits in this way. It fits in a way which I haven't fitted it in. I have to make a little hole for it now. But there is another aspect of President Reagan who can easily support things which he can visualize as being the biggest or best of something, right? And if he grasps it, then he will support it even though it's very expensive. I mean, that is what SDI is. Edward Teller said, just imagine, I don't want to do the accent, but but just imagine like an Astrodome over America. And all those missiles from the evil empire bouncing off harmlessly, safe at last, you know, and all the rest of it. Well, he saw that, especially because there was he had once acted in a picture which had a ray which immobilized all enemy airplanes. So it reminded him that these things had to happen because it was in a movie, so he was willing to spend $500 billion over a period of years on something because in his mind he could visualize it. Well, if you say, you know, a super, had you merely said a collider, you might not get very far. But you start using the word super, the biggest, and all the space it covers, it'll be bigger than anything anybody else has, and not even the Japanese will have something as big as this, you know, or whatever. That's a notion that really can engage this president. So it seems somewhat contradictory with my general thought that no money for anything. I should have said no money for anything except those things which become pictures in the president's mind. Yes, ma'am.
When you were talking about the comparison between the hostage crisis, when the hostage crisis going on under Carter, you had television every night saying this is day, you know, 214 of the hostage crisis. How do you excuse or explain the fact that the media isn't doing that, but this is year four of the hostage crisis?
Teflon. Well, first of all, the media got the television got an awful lot of criticism for having done it the first time. When in 1979 and 1980, Walter Cronkite ended every broadcast every night and saying, and that's the news on the 244th night of the hostage crisis and so on and so forth. After all, people began to realize that this was, in effect, putting a form of political pressure on President Carter, who was being blamed for this. So a great many journalism schools and conferences were held and media meetings were held and saying you shouldn't do that. And so having learned that it's not a nice thing to do, television doesn't do it. I think that's one of the reasons it's not done. The other reason is it is not, first of all, the dimensions of having an entire embassy seized with 52 American government employees occupied in that embassy by a hostile power under the control of a state which allows that to happen, is in terms of dimension somewhat greater than 7, 8, 9, 10 individuals seized by shadowy figures in a country which to call it a state is almost an oxymoron. It isn't quite of the same dimension as the seizure of the American embassy in Tehran. Aside from that, you know, the media learn that some things that they do are not popular, and they just stop doing them. And the third thing is that President Carter made the mistake of saying, "I will not campaign. I will not leave the White House. I will spend all my time working on this hostage crisis," and made it his crisis. And Ronald Reagan says, "Life goes on, you know. I'll talk to Peggy Say. I'll tell her I'm sorry." and then I'll go out and carry on with what I was doing. And the result is that he moves away from crisis, unlike Connor, who did not have the sense to say, it's a crisis but not mine, instead embraced it and said, it is my problem to handle, and we made it his problem. Yeah.
Recently you co-wrote a book with your wife called Within Our Reach.
Yes. Right. Thank you. It gives me a chance to plug my wife's book. My wife has written a wonderful book. You know I'm dispassionate. And I say this just because it is so. My wife has written a wonderful book, the title of which is Within Our Reach. The subtitle is Breaking the Cycle of Disadvantage. It happens to be published by Doubleday. And I think in this forum I will not mention the price of the book, which might be going too far. But it comes from her work over a period of many years in and out of government, studying the problems of the disadvantaged, especially young people and families, and studying programs which are working on a small scale in various parts of the country with great effect, statistically shown to have important effects in reaching and trying to break some of the early causes that lead to later terrible outcomes. And when she was working on this book, she raised the question that you've raised, is what's the use of doing this if, with Reagan there, we're not ever going to get anything done about it? Well, I have two things to say about it. First of all, it really is true that we do not very soon see a lot of national funding for programs like this. On the other hand, a very strange thing has happened. Among the people who her own professional community has been sort of invigorated by the appearance of this book, because it's the first time that is an optimistic message saying that there are things that do work and can work, whereas people have been, like Charles Murray, have been saying, you know, nothing works, you're just losing ground with everything you do. And so she's gotten a great deal of attention. Oddly enough, she's gotten a certain amount of attention from very right-wing people. Who pick up some of her language of saying things that happen in places on a small scale with dedicated people doing things, and because there is a message there that's a pragmatic message, and because right-wing people are looking for ways to be populist in a right-wing way, seems to have gotten some response, something called the Center for Ethics and Social Policy, with Irving Kristol and Jean Kirkpatrick and people like that on the board, who have asked my wife if she would work on a seminar and symposium with them. So oddly enough, from all the way around to the right, there are people coming and looking. All I can say is there comes a point where things get so bad that somebody says, we have to do something to make them better. It is unfortunate America tends not to react to problems until they reach crisis proportions, when sometimes it is too late to react to them at all. But, you know, all you can do is put things out there and say, look, when you're ready for something that'll work, here it is. It's all ready for you to work. Meanwhile, I hope you all read my wife's book. Yeah.
Ideas shaken out by his packagers and had new speeches instilled in him and whatnot. What I wonder is, are the individuals that we're talking about, president-elect, et cetera, are these individuals who have said, I've got a mission that I feel I need to accomplish, and this is the way to do it. This is the way to gain popularity. Through some sort of popularity, I can fulfill the programs, I can accomplish my mission. Or are we actually talking about handlers who have the mission, who have found a mouthpiece for the mission?
Let me give you a kind of a shorthand answer. Of three recent Republican presidents, I think that Nixon became president as an end in itself. He needed to complete himself. He wasn't sure who he was, and he thought if he became president, it would make him feel as though he was a complete person. And he never really had any big idea of what he wanted to do when he became president. President Reagan became president, I think, not as an end, but as a means. He really had an agenda. He really saw things he really wanted to do, and he thought if one had to become president to do them, he wanted to be president. Bush, I think, becomes president as a kind of, it's the next promotion for somebody who has an aristocratic obligation to perform public service. And so if this is the next thing you're supposed to do, then this is the next thing that I will do. It's the end of the line, and having done everything else in the government, at some point you have to do that. That sounds like a terrible thing to say, except I think it means that Bush will be better than we have any reason at the moment to expect. But the Bush who put himself in the hands of handlers and suddenly within a couple of months became a George Bush that people who had known him before didn't recognize was somebody who had said, if that's what it takes to be president, I'll do it. I will, for the next 4 months, you know, resign from the human race and turn my body over to Roger Ailes and Bob Teeter. And once I am president, I'll put that behind me. And that was what I think the message was in his victory statement on election night, that the campaign is a nasty thing, but that's over, and now we're going to govern. I think this is what he is saying. Now, if a person deserves to be president by having achieved it that way, I don't know. But I think that is the way, I think that is the truth. I think that a lot of things that Bush said during the campaign, you will never hear again. I think that he will invite Governor Dukakis to lunch and one way or another find a way to apologize to him and say, I didn't do that, I had to do it. They made me do it. I really, it's not the way I would have done it. I tell you that, these are intuitions of mine which may not stand up in practice, but I think that is the way it's going to be. If that is true, and if he really says, I'm now president, and what am I supposed to do if I'm supposed to do right? What are the necessities, all the rest of it, if he managed to shuck off the years of Reagan ideology and the slogans that go with it, which he doesn't have to do anymore, if he manages to satisfy the right-wing ideologues by giving them Danny Quayle and saying, go play with these people while I run the country. He may be better than we at the moment seem to think, simply because he really is not a bad man. And with that great note of cheer and inspiration, thank you.